Today in Congress, the House is debating a bill that backers say will provide oversight of private security firms in Iraq, making all of them subject to prosecution by U.S. courts, closing the loophole that leaves State Department contractors immune to prosecution. The Senate passed a similar bill on Monday. University of Connecticut law professor Laura Dickinson, whom we spoke with yesterday, thinks the proposal would make the situation better because it would require the FBI to put together investigative teams on the ground in Iraq. Jeremy Scahill, author of Blackwater, says the bill can't be enforced. What American prosecutor is going to go to Iraq to interview Iraqi witnesses, for instance? But author Naomi Klein says there's a bigger problem. She says contractors are part of the new disaster capitalism, a plan to replace government jobs, fighting wars, building highways, or responding to catastrophes, with private industry. Naomi's book is titled The Shock Doctrine, The Rise of Disaster Capitalism. She joins us. Naomi, why'd you write this?
The point of this is to provide a challenge to the official story that these radical corporate policies have swept the world, whether in Russia after the collapse of the Soviet Union or Thatcher's Britain or China or Iraq, that this has been a peaceful enterprise. I think that this is the story that's so often told. We hear from George Bush that free people and free markets go hand in hand around the world. And what I'm doing with the book was show the interrelationship between crisis, shocks, disasters, and the advancement of an ideology that is actually very radical and is not supported by the majority of the people on this planet.
If disaster capitalism is happening, what in your mind is it replacing?
What it is replacing is the kind of market economy that dominated from the period after the Great Depression through the 60s, which was known as a mixed economy or a Keynesian economy, or in my country, in Canada, as social democracy, part capitalist and also has elements really of socialism. I mean, you know, in my country, we have a public health care system. So this phase of disaster capitalism is really about the war against the welfare state.
Well, let's give you a chance to make your case. Let's talk about war spending first. Blackwater USA under the spotlight now because of the recent shooting in Baghdad, Iraqis saying Blackwater security guards shot innocent civilians. Several investigations ongoing. Blackwater has built an army of 20,000 people that it's hired, a $50 million military base in North Carolina. This was part of the Pentagon plan under Donald Rumsfeld to contract out jobs and streamline the military.
In the book, I quote Mitch Daniels, who is Bush's former budget director, saying that the job of government is not to provide services, but to make sure that services are provided. So really what it is it's a vision of a hollow state. So it goes beyond what we tend to think of as privatization, you know, privatizing water, privatizing electricity, privatizing roads, sort of selling off the limbs of the state. And it enters the very core of what we think of as a core state function, like providing security, like police, like firefighting, like disaster response. And really what has emerged under Bush is this strategy of radically outsourcing these core functions.
Well, as you know, there are people saying, well, why is that a problem if it saves us money in Iraq? You say why you think it's a problem. First of all, that this is taxpayer money that's given to private companies like Halliburton or Blackwater USA.
This all happens in the fog of war. It's a kind of a corporate mission creep. And this is the thesis of the shock doctrine, is that then this shadow economy emerges where you have Blackwater with 20,000 soldiers at the ready. You have companies like Bechtel with, you know, very, very, you know, current equipment. And this has all been financed with public money, but the public doesn't own these assets. So what I'm worried about, and I think what we're seeing an increasing discussion of, is as the federal contracts start to dry up, then these companies can start to sell back the services at a price. And then, you know, you end up with a situation where, you know, a company like Blackwater can market its services in a disaster zone, but only the people who can afford security get it. This radical privatization agenda leaps forward under cover of crisis, under cover of shock, precisely because it's in those moments when public debate is very, very difficult. We are finding out that the Abu Ghraib scandal, where those photographs were leaked and we were horrified to see these images of abuse, but at the same time, through that scandal, we found out that a company like Khaki was engaging in military interrogation. And what does it mean when a private company is engaged in interrogation? There's the profit motive. And if there's the profit motive, then don't they have an added incentive to try to get whatever information will make the people paying their contracts, paying their bills, happy? But for me, the larger issue is that none of this was ever debated. I mean, there was never a public debate. You weren't sick the day that everyone decided it would be a good idea to have private companies engaged in prison interrogation or providing such essential security functions as Blackwater is doing in Iraq.
Let's talk about the domestic situation. You consider the recent news, for instance, the Minneapolis bridge collapse. A Wall Street Journal editorial afterwards said, get private investors to rebuild roads and bridges after the subway flooded in New York. Somebody suggested sell the subway to a private concern. They'll run it better. A lot of Americans feel that their local governments in particular have failed them. What is the problem with getting, a private company to, let's say, run the subway, build the bridges? What is your concern?
Well, you know, their local governments have failed them. But what I'm arguing in the book is that, you know, we can't all, we tend to talk about this in the, as if it's all been a series of mistakes. You know, it's just the incompetence or the greed of a local politician. What I'm arguing is that this steady decay of the public sphere is the result of a 25-year war against the public sphere, against so-called big government and the welfare state. So, you know, it erodes, and then it becomes indefensible, right? I mean, the subways don't work, and the bridges are collapsing, and of course you're ready for any change, any solution. But the problem with privatizing the bridges and the roads and the subways is that, of course, the business model changes, and it's no longer based on a principle of universal access, that this is what it means to be shared members of a society, that we all have access to certain essential services, and you start charging higher and higher tolls and fares. So you have, once again, you have this kind of radical two-tiering of society.
There was one example that you give that jumped out and stayed with me. It's this idea of privatized disaster response. You say it's now a hot industry in the South, a company calling itself HelpJet. Its promise is to turn a hurricane evacuation into a jet setter vacation. They will come in and pick you up and take you away. What does that story tell you?
Well, like I said, you know, I feel like these disasters are giving us glimpses of the future, and we will get there if we're not careful. And HelpJet really stuck out for me as well. This is a company that was launched a year after Hurricane Katrina, and they're catering to the people who can afford to buy salvation and want more than salvation. They want luxury salvation. So they'll warn you when the hurricane is coming. They'll pick you up at your house and take you to a private terminal and put you on a charter plane and make your reservation at a five-star golf resort or at Disney World. You know, they say, you know, escape the hassles and the lines and turn your hurricane into a luxury vacation. You know, another example is the New Orleans school system. 3 months after the levees broke, Milton Friedman, the guru of this extreme version of capitalism, this fundamental version of capitalism, wrote an op-ed for the Wall Street Journal, and he said, the parents and the teachers, the residents of New Orleans are spread across the country. The city lies in ruins. This is a tragedy. It's also an opportunity. It's an opportunity to remake New Orleans' school system. And that's exactly what's happened. You know, after the disaster, with the parents and the teachers unable to participate in this process precisely because they had been hit by this disaster, a lot of right-wing ideologues moved into the city and have turned New Orleans into the country's leading laboratory for charter schools.
Well, that's Naomi Klein. She's author of The Shock Doctrine, The Rise of Disaster Capitalism. And in the book, she quotes economist Milton Friedman further. Friedman has said, only a crisis, actual or perceived, produces real change. In other words, crisis is an opportunity for political or economic change. Well, when we come back, we'll hear what Naomi's critics have to say. And they do speak about those charter schools she just mentioned. If those charter schools can do a better job than public ones, they ask, why shouldn't parents be able to send their kids there? Don't forget, later in the program, Garrison Keillor will be here. We'll all be back after the news here and now. We're back with more from Naomi Klein, author of The Shock Doctrine, The Rise of Disaster Capitalism, making her case that corporations are taking advantage of disasters to move in and take over key government roles. Naomi, as you know, your theory's been criticized. You recently got into a heated debate with former Fed Reserve Chair Alan Greenspan on the Amy Goodman Show, Democracy Now! He basically accused you of being against a capitalist system. Ted Redburn of the New York Times writes that you are most blind to the necessary role of entrepreneurial capitalism. The National Post, a Toronto newspaper, ran excerpts from your book, but also a critique from columnist Terrence Corcoran, who said just four pages into the shock doctrine and already the wheels are flying off Naomi Klein's big new ideological busload of leftist fantasy. So let's start with him. He says your criticism of charter schools goes too far. What do you say to parents who want to send their kids to charter schools because they say public schools have failed them?
If it were parents that were driving this process, and if it were teachers that were driving this process, then I would have absolutely no problem with it, because I think that the school system is far too centralized. And anything that does decentralize it while keeping it accessible, I would be fully in favor of. My problem with what's happened in New Orleans is its anti-democratic nature. The thesis of the book is the challenge to the official story that this ideology has advanced hand in hand in tandem with freedom and democracy. If you can only advance your ideas in the aftermath of a cataclysmic event, I would say something is wrong with your ideas. I think that when ideas are good, they should be able to be tested in a democracy. And it's harder because life is messy and people disagree with you. But that's what it means to live in a democracy. The teachers' union was broken while the teachers were out of the city. Their contract was shredded. This was an extraordinarily anti-democratic process and also deeply unfair because, you know, more than $100 billion of public money was liberated in the name of reconstructing New Orleans. And I think that the residents of that city had a right to be part of deciding how that money was spent, and that it was a terrible stolen opportunity from them after they had suffered so much. But, you know, I want to respond to this claim that I'm against, entrepreneurial capitalism, because this campaign for this fundamentalist vision of a world that has no role for the state except to enforce contracts and to police borders is a very radical vision. It's a fundamentalist vision that has really been a rebellion against a mixed economy, which absolutely had elements of entrepreneurial capitalism in it and innovation in it. But it was regulated and it was limited, and there were spaces that were kept away from that entrepreneurial impulse precisely because they were considered too important. And so really, when I debated Alan Greenspan, I was talking, and I said this very clearly to him, I was talking about not communism versus capitalism, which I think is really a straw man, but a mixed economy versus this fundamentalist vision of the world, which sees no role for the public.
You say that this disaster capitalism has been felt so much around the world that actually people, when disaster strikes, come up with conspiracy theories. They think that somebody deliberately caused the devastation so that they could profit from it. You say that's not happening, but what is?
You know, I think part of the reason why these conspiracy theories are so prevalent is because people see how quickly the disaster capitalism complex leaps into action. You know, you're in New Orleans, and, you know, within days, Blackwater has shown up, and they're providing private security, and Halliburton and Bechtel and Fluor and the whole, it's as if the green zone in Iraq has lifted up and landed on the Gulf Coast, and there's just this scramble to profit, and then there's also the policy opportunism. For instance, I start the book quoting a Republican congressman saying, we couldn't clean out the housing projects, but God did, and there was a meeting at the Heritage Foundation 2 weeks after the levees broke, where they came up with 32 free market solutions, and it included everything from turning the Gulf Coast into a tax-free free enterprise zone to drilling in the National Arctic Wildlife Reserve. So people see the opportunism and they conclude, well, they must have caused the disaster so that they can exploit it. And what I'm arguing is it's not that they're causing the disasters, it's that what I'm describing as the shock doctrine, this philosophy of power, that it is only after a crisis that you can push through this radical ideology, is so deeply understood at the height of policymaking that the ideas are instantly ready as soon as the crisis hits. Some people stockpile canned goods and water in preparation for a disaster, but I think the Heritage Foundation and the American Enterprise Institute stockpile radical ideological plans.
Naomi Klein, if you are wrong, you are Chicken Little. If you are right, Do you think there's any way to put this back in the box? Is there any way to reverse this?
You know, I think that there is. And one of the things that I do in the book is I look at these key junctures where this ideology leapt forward. Going back 35 years, Latin America in the 70s and Poland in 1989, South Africa in 1994, these key junctures where economic shock therapy was imposed on a country. And one of the truisms of our time is the idea that there is no alternative, that these ideas have triumphed precisely because all other ideas revealed themselves to be failed, to be broken, to be wanting. And we often hear the only thing worse than capitalism is the alternative. But when I take another look at these key junctures and show how important crisis and disaster was in advancing the ideology, is I also show that there were real alternatives that were proposed and that people voted for at all of these key junctures. And I think that when we look at those alternatives, whether it was solidarity in Poland's economic program or the African National Congress in South Africa, their plans to really redistribute the wealth of the country, when we look at this, then we see that it's not that there was no alternative. It's that those alternatives never had a chance. And I think that when we do that, then there's a chance to have more confidence in the alternatives to this economic model. I think it is possible to reverse this trend, but only if the people who believe in a different world, who don't believe that, you know, when a crisis hits, the wealthy should be able to escape in luxury jets and the poor should be left to drown. Only if those people have the confidence in their vision of a more equitable world when push comes to shove and fight for their vision instead of just allowing the disaster capitalists to advance theirs.
Naomi Klein, her new book is The Shock Doctrine, The Rise of Disaster Capitalism. Naomi, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Okay, looking ahead, tomorrow on Here and Now, two loving brothers, one an openly gay Episcopalian priest, one a bishop who's broken with the church over gay rights. That's